Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 20. And today's verse is text number 5. I'm a little confused. I thought today was the 3rd of July, isn't it? Yes? But today's the 3rd, isn't it? But they're having a 4th of July parade on the 3rd? Okay. That's why I was a little bit blindsided by all the devotees walking out. Okay. Pratnasya Vishnu Rupam Yat Satyasyartasya Brahmanaha Amritasya Cha Mrityo Cha Suryam Atmanam Imahiti Pratnasya Vishnu Rupam Yat Satyasya Artasya Brahmanaha Amritasya Cha Mrityoscha Suryam Atmanam Imahiti Pratnasya Vishnu Rupam Yat Satyasya Artasya Brahmanaha Amritasya Cha Mrityoscha Suryam Atmanam Imahiti Pratnasya Vishnu Rupam Yat Satyasya Ratasya Brahmanaha Amritasya Cha Mrityoscha Suryam Atmanam Imahiti. Please chant. Pratnasya Vishnu Rupam Yat Satyasya Ratasya Brahmanaha Amritasya Cha Mrityoscha Suryam Atmanam Imahiti. Asya Vishnu Rupam Yat Satyasya Artasya Brahmanaha Amritasya Cha Mrityoscha Suryam Atmanam Imahiti. Pratnasya Vishnu Rupam Yat Satyasya Artasya Brahmanaha Amritasya Cha Mrityoscha Suryam Atmanam Imahiti. Vaishnavins? No? Okay. Synonyms? Pratnasya, of the oldest person. Vishnoho, Lord Vishnu. Rupam, the form. Yat, which? Satyasya, of the absolute truth. Ritasya, of dharma. Brahmanaha, of the supreme Brahman. Amritasya, of the auspicious result. Cha, and Mrityoho, of death, the inauspicious result. Cha, and Suryam, the demigod Surya. Atmanam, the super soul or origin of all souls. Imahi, we approach for shelter. Iti, thus. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. So the first sentence is parenthetical. It's not part of the verse itself. It just explains what's going to happen. So that parenthetical phrase says, this is the mantra by which the inhabitants of Plakshadweep worship the Supreme Lord. Then the actual translation of the verse, let us take shelter of the sun god who is a reflection of Lord Vishnu, the all-expanding Supreme Personality of Godhead, the oldest of all persons. Vishnu is the only worshipable Lord. He is the Vedas, he is religion, and he is the origin of all auspicious and inauspicious results. Please repeat. This is the mantra by which the inhabitants of Plakshadweep worship the Supreme Lord. Let us take shelter of the Sun God, who is a reflection of Lord Vishnu, the all-expanding Supreme Personality of Godhead, the oldest of all persons. Vishnu is the only worshipable Lord. He is the Vedas. He is religion. And he is the origin of all auspicious and inauspicious results. Purport. Lord Vishnu is even the Supreme Lord of Death, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Sarvaharascha Aham, Bhagavad Gita 10:34. There are two kinds of activity, auspicious and inauspicious, and both are controlled by Lord Vishnu. Inauspicious activities are said to be behind Lord Vishnu, whereas auspicious activities stand before him. The auspicious and the inauspicious exist throughout the entire world, and Lord Vishnu is the controller of them both. In regard to this verse, Srila Madhvacharya says, Surya Somagni Varisha Vidhatrashu Yata Kramam Plakshadi Dvipa Sangstasu Sitang Harim Upasate. There are many lands, fields, mountains, and oceans throughout the creation, and everywhere the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped by his different names. Srila Viraraghava Acharya explains this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam as follows. The original cause of the cosmic manifestation must be the oldest person and must therefore be beyond material transformations. He is the enjoyer of all auspicious activities and is the cause of conditional life and also liberation. The demigod Surya, who is categorized as a very powerful jiva or living entity, is a representation of one of the parts of his body. We are naturally subordinate to powerful living entities, and therefore we can worship the various demigods as living beings who are powerful representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although the worship of the Sun God is recommended in this mantra, he is worshipped not as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but as his powerful representative. In the Katha Upanishad 1.3.1, it is said, Ritang pibanto sukritasyaloke guhang pravishto parame pararde chaya tapau brahmavido vadanti panchagnayo ye chatri nachiketaha. O Nachiketa, the expansions of Lord Vishnu as a tiny living entity and the Supersoul are both situated within the cave of the heart of this body. Having entered that cavity, the living entity resting on the chief of the life heirs enjoys the results of activities, and the Supersoul acting as witness enables him to enjoy them. Those who are well versed in knowledge of Brahman and those householders who carefully follow the Vedic regulations say that the difference between the two is like the difference between a shadow and the sun. In the Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.16 it is said, Savishvakrit Vishva Vidat Mayoni Gya Kala Karo Guni Sarva Vidyak Pradhana Chaitragya Patir Gunesha Sangsara Moksha Stiti Bhanda Hetuhu. The Supreme Lord, the creator of this cosmic manifestation, knows every nook and corner of his creation. Although he is the cause of creation, there is no cause for his appearance. He is fully aware of everything. He is the Supersoul, the master of all transcendental qualities, and he is the master of this cosmic manifestation. In regard to bondage to the conditional state of material existence and liberation from that bondage. Similarly, in the Taittiriya Upanishad, it is said, Bishashmad Vatak Pavate Bishoditi Surya Bishashmad Agnish Chandrasya Mrityur Dhavati Panchamaha. It is out of fear of the Supreme Brahman that the wind is blowing, out of fear of him that the sun regularly rises and sets, and out of fear of him that fire acts. It is only due to fear of him that death and Indra, the King of Heaven, perform their respective duties. As described in this chapter, the inhabitants of the five islands, beginning with Plakshadweep, worship the sun god, the moon god, the fire god, the air god, and Lord Brahma, respectively. Although they engage in the worship of these five demigods, however, they actually worship Lord Vishnu, the super soul of all living entities, as indicated in this verse by the words Pratnasya Vishnu Rupam. Vishnu is Brahma Amrita Mrityu, the Supreme Brahman and the origin of everything, auspicious and inauspicious. He is situated in the heart of everyone, including all the demigods. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7:20, Kamai Staista Hrita Jnana Papadyante Na Devata. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto the demigods. People who are almost blind because of lusty desires are recommended to worship the demigods to have their material desires fulfilled. But actually, those desires are not fulfilled by the material demigods. Whatever the demigods do is done with the sanction of Lord Vishnu. People who are too lusty worship various demigods instead of worshipping Lord Vishnu, the super soul of all living entities. But ultimately, it is Lord Vishnu they worship because he is the super soul of all demigods. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Parishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswate Neve Gauravani Vicharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Desha Tarine Om Agyanata Mirandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Umilitam Jena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this verse proves that Srila Prabhupada could have written his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 10 times greater than what he's delivered. Because here's a verse that seems on the surface to be not so significant in terms of, you know, the flow of the Bhagavatam, but Prabhupada has written a purport that is extremely lengthy. So, I mean, he had the capability of writing pages and pages of purports on every single verse, but just understanding that the attention span of the average person in Kali Yuga is very limited, he kept it in check. So, it may seem a little confusing that residents of higher planets who are more intelligent than human beings are worshipping, respectively here stated, the sun god, the moon god, the fire god, Lord Brahma. Why are they worshipping these demigods? They're supposed to be more intelligent than human beings. But as Prabhupada says, the first line of the verse explains that this is completely in relation to Lord Vishnu. It is kind of like our performing Guru Puja. We have in our prayers to the spiritual master in the morning, Sakshadari Trayana Samasta Shastra Uktastata. We know Sakshadari, he's not Krishna, he's not God himself, but because he is a pure representative of Krishna, he's worshipped accordingly. Prabhupada used to give the example of an ambassador. If the United States ambassador goes to visit Spain, let's say, they receive him with just as much pomp and ceremony as they would receive the President of the United States. That is the protocol. So, looking at that material comparison, we can understand a little bit that the pure representative of God is to be worshipped as good as God, because he's representing God purely. He's on God's mission, doing God's work. So, in that regard, these residents of the higher planets, they're aware that the sun god, the moon god, blah, blah, blah. Although sometimes there can be confusion, and in order to clear it up, Lord Muni approached Lord Brahma to ask him about this. There's a nice verse, I believe it's in the third canto, maybe the second canto, it's been a while since I looked at it. He says, Deva Deva Jagat Dhatur, Bhuta Bhavana Purvaja, Tad Bhujani Yajjnanam, Atma Tattva Nivdarshanam. So he approaches Lord Brahma and he addresses him as Deva Deva, Lord of the demigods. Because Lord Brahma is accepted to be the chief of the demigods. Jagadatu, he's maintaining, apparently, maintaining the universe.
Bhutabhavana Purvaja. So Narad Muni is here addressing Lord Brahma very respectfully, because we know Narad Muni appears as son of Lord Brahma. But then he asks, he says, please give me knowledge, he's inquiring, yat vijani tadhyanam atma tattva nidarshanam. I want knowledge that gives me darshan of the absolute truth, atma tattva. So Pilarananda Swami was pointing out that, you know, nowadays people are so far removed from knowledge of God that they literally worship any powerful personality or popular personality, famous personality. Even just somebody who gives them an iPod, like Steve Jobs, they worship at his lotus feet. Oh, iPod 4, oh my God, iPhone 4, this is so wonderful. But it's just another indication of how far removed from reality people have become in this Kali Yuga. For instance, they may read Bhagavad Gita, in which it's mentioned that Sanjaya was sitting in the court palace with Dhritarashtra, but he was relating what was going on in the battlefield miles and miles away. He was not there in person. He was sitting in the palace with Dhritarashtra. So Prabhupada asked, how is that possible? So Prabhupada said, this is possible by spiritual television. Because he was empowered by Srila Vyasadeva, from within his heart he could see what was going on, you know, miles and miles away. So Prabhupada compares it nowadays to our television. We have regular television where there's a broadcast center. In our case, there's Mount Milson. If you look east on Venice Boulevard, you see the mountains, and on top you can see the antennas. That's where we're getting our signal from. So from up there, they're broadcasting signals that people are picking up in all their homes, and everybody's seeing a picture. While it's going through the air, it's not a picture, it's just energy. It's just wavelengths of energy. But the TV picks it up and converts it back into the original picture. So similarly, on higher levels of existence, there are subtler forms of this kind of science, if you would, technology, where pictures can be transmitted in a subtle way and received within the heart of a qualified personality. So this is how Sanjaya was seeing what was going on in the battlefield. But nowadays, we're so far removed that we worship the gross technologists. Somebody who can give us an iPod or an iPhone, or we pray, oh Lord, please buy me an iPhone 4. Like that. But when you tell them about this subtle technology, they don't believe that. This is all mythology. No, it's not mythology. It's a reality that you don't have access to at the moment because you're not qualified. Just like to get an iPhone 4, you need to pony up your $200-$300 and sign a 2-year contract at $85 a month or whatever it is. That's your qualification for getting an iPhone 4. So similarly, to experience spiritual television, you have to have some qualification. Some qualification has to be there. You have to pay the price. Now, that price may not be in dollars and cents, but it is in pious activities. Here it's mentioned that Lord Vishnu is the source of both controller of both pious and impious activities. Impious activities are said to be on the backside of the Lord Vishnu, and pious activities are on his front. We also have experience of that. When somebody's doing something bad, wrong, generally speaking, if they're a little bit advanced, they know they're doing something wrong, and they immediately become a little bit shyer when they're busted, right? If you catch somebody stealing something, and they know they're not supposed to steal. Only those who are really, really ignorant can do something wrong, and they don't care. They just don't care. A person who's a little bit advanced, if they're doing something wrong and they get caught, they immediately become a little bit shy like that. So, like that, anything inauspicious is on the backside of the Lord, not bold enough to come in front of the Lord. And like Prabhupada used to say, in order to associate with fire, you have to be fire yourself. Can't enter fire if you're not fire. So to become qualified to be always in front of the Lord, one has to be pure. The Lord is the supreme pure. So one has to start out with acting piously and then even go beyond material piety to spiritual purity. Here it's mentioned also that the Supreme Lord, the residents there are meditating on Lord Vishnu as being the oldest person. So many religions have this conception of God as being the oldest person. And therefore they wrongfully visualize God as being an old man with a long beard. No. Krishna came on this planet. He appeared, first of all, on his forehead in front of Vasudeva and Devaki. And then they requested him to please hide that form. So he assumed a baby form, which was then carried to Vrindavan by Vasudeva. And then apparently he grew up from that baby form to childhood and then to youth. But never beyond that. Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna is eternally appearing as a youth somewhere between 16 and 20, something like that. And when he left this planet 5,000 years ago, he had been on the planet for at least 125 years, but he didn't look any older than that 16 to 20 year old range. And not only Krishna, but Krishna's associates also, like the Pandavas. We don't hear that they were like, you know, walking around with canes. They were all over 100 years old. Rukmini Devi, it's stated in Bhagavatam that even though she was a grandmother, she wasn't looking like that, looking still fresh youth. So this is actually our birthright, this Navayovanam, this eternal youthful appearance is actually the birthright of the soul. Krishna, God, is eternally youthful and therefore his parts and parcels, all of us, we're also. So going through this, what was that you called that yesterday? What was that you said in regards to forgetting the verse that you had read? You used the phrase, yes, and a getting old moment or something. What did you call it? A senior? Yeah, senior. Right. So this business of becoming seniors, and this is all on the bodily platform. The soul doesn't get to that stage. We're eternally youthful. And that's why we feel so put off by this whole aging of the body. All these wrinkles and gray hairs and aches and pains. It's foreign to us. It's not part of our nature. And therefore we are put off by it. What's this? What's going on? But one who's on the body platform, they become really put off by it. And they run here and there, try to get this cream, that procedure, trying to stave off old age. But the devotees know it's just a temporary manifestation. Just like the childhood, the baby body was a temporary manifestation. The child body was temporarily manifested, the youth body. So similarly, the old body will one day disappear and one will also again get another body, either material or expand one's original spiritual form to live with Krishna on the spiritual platform. So the devotee is not put off by aging, the aging of the body, ultimately. This business of thinking of Krishna as the oldest is also sanctioned by Krishna himself in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. You may know that verse. It was a favorite of Mahavishnu Maharaj, the elder Mahavishnu. One of my favorite preachers in ISKCON. He's now gone, hopefully to join Krishna's eternal pastimes. But he used to love to recite this verse. Kavim Purana Manusha Sitaram Anuraniyam Samanusparedyak Sarvatara Taram Achintarupam Adityavarnam. What is that last line? Adityavaranam, tamasak parastad. He's transcendental to tamas, to ignorance. So he's Krishna speaking to Arjuna, he's telling him how to meditate on him. So the first thing is kavim, that he knows everything, past, present, future. He's the original kavi. He knows everything. Therefore we should meditate on that. Meditating on that means understanding that you can't hide anything from Krishna. Sometimes we've done things in the past. Like they say, there are many deep, dark family secrets. It may be deep, dark secret to somebody else, but not to Krishna. Krishna knows everything. Kavim Puranam, the oldest. So, why are we all the oldest? Because we're all parts and parcels of Krishna. But still it's stated that Krishna being the origin is accepted as the oldest person. Anushasana Sitaram, he's the controller of everyone. Kavim Puranam, Anuraniyam, he is smaller than the smallest. Prabhupada explains in that purport that the living entity, Jiva, is 1/10,000 the tip of the hair, but Krishna enters into the heart of that small particle. There seems to be some, maybe some confusion there. It seems sometimes it's stated that Krishna is within the heart even of the Jiva soul, but here in today's purport it was mentioned that within the body there's a cavity of the heart, and in that cavity there's a super soul along with the Jiva soul. So either way, Krishna is smaller than the smallest. Anuraniyam Anusmaradya. One should think of Krishna that way. Sarvatra Dhataram, he's maintaining everyone. Achintya, inconceivable.
This is another thing that we have to meditate on. We may go on gathering knowledge of Krishna from authorized sources, but you never get to the end. Because Krishna and Krishna's potencies are inconceivable. One cannot conceive of Krishna's potencies, the things that he can do. Here it's mentioned there are powerful personalities in the universe, and we naturally have the tendency to worship powerful personalities. But they're getting their Shakti from Krishna. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, all the demigods, they have super potencies compared to us. But even on our level of existence, we see there's so many living entities that have potencies that we don't have. Even a tiny, insignificant mosquito can fly. We can't do that. You know, we go to the airport, get in some plane, and we pray that we land safely. Every day they're falling out of the sky, literally. Especially these little ones. You know, I go hiking a lot, and in the mountains, you can't get away from them. They're so noisy. I don't understand. It's not, technologically, it's not necessary for engines to be that noisy. Like every day we hear these Harleys, they go down and it's not necessary. You have many, many bikes that have silenced systems. They go down, you don't even hear them. So it's not necessary for motors to be that loud. Anyway, it's another thing. But, so we have to admit there are so many living entities that have potencies that we don't have. However, because we're a little more intelligent, they all succumb to us. I was reading recently, because it's so amazing, you know, we need energy to fuel our civilization. Now in the past, people, intelligent people, would grow some mustard or whatever, and they would take this oil from the seeds, and they would use that to light their lamps and to oil their machines, whatever machines they had. Then came the industrial age, where they started building these huge ships. So I was just reading an account of one such ship called the Essex. It's a famous story. Most of you know Moby Dick. You may have read that classic book. It was actually based on a true story of this particular ship. So in the early 1800s, they used to go out whaling. They couldn't grow, just, you know, stay home and grow nice crops and take the oil from the seeds. No. They had to build these ships. So this Essex was like 87 feet long, weighed over 200 tons. And then it would go out sailing. This ship left Nantucket in Massachusetts, sailed all the way down the east coast of North America, all the way down the east coast of South America, then around the corner and up into Pacific, just off the coast of Peru. Thousands of miles, actually, off the coast of Peru. They were whaling. They were killing these sperm whales. Because the sperm whale, more than any other whales, they have these two different kinds of oil. One is called the spermaceti. It's this reservoir of oil they have in their heads. And they really wanted that oil. That was very, very expensive oil they could sell. And then they rendered the rest of the body and they got some other kind of oil from them. So imagine, a sperm whale bull, they say it grows to about 67 feet long, almost as long as a ship. Now, according to accounts of the sailors, there were 21 sailors on this particular ship. What happened next was they saw a bull, sperm whale, that was bigger than usual, so practically the size of the ship. So he got angry that they were killing his probably his offspring and his relatives. And first of all, he rammed them broadside. Bang! Hit the ship. And these whalers, these guys, these sailors, they'd never seen anything like that. They're used to just being the killers. They're used to being the attackers, not the attackees. So this huge whale, he hits the ship once, and they start to sink. Then he goes out and comes directly towards the bow of the ship and hits them a second time, and the ship goes down. So the guys, they got off on their three smaller whale boats, and it's a harrowing account. They, you know, were at sea for a while and hungry and tired. But then they came upon this island called Henderson Island, and they killed all the birds there because they, you know, the birds were not aware of humans so much, and so they had an easy time. And once they decimated all the birds there, then they were hungry again, so they got back in the boats. At least three of them stayed there, and the other rest of the group, they took off on the other boats. And they were thousands of miles from land, so naturally, they started dying. And then when a person would die, they turned to cannibalism. And then after some time, they couldn't wait for another person to die, so they started drawing straws. And whoever lost agreed to be killed, and then somebody had to kill him, and then they would cut him up and eat him like that. So this went on for weeks and months, and anyway, to make a long story short, at the end, three of them survived and told this tale of what happened. So this is the actual true story on which Moby Dick was based. But my point was that we misuse our intelligence as human beings.
We're intelligent enough to dominate the animals. Therefore, now even these huge sperm whales are in trouble. There are only a few of them left out there. Because, you know, as time progressed, they got bigger and bigger whale ships and more intelligent methods of slaughtering these huge animals. Horrible. Horrible. That human beings, you know, misuse your intelligence in this way. So actual intelligence means like what the residents of Plakshadweep are doing. They're worshipping the sun god, which is authorized. In our line, we are following Lord Brahma, who left us the Brahma Sanhita. So in the Brahma Sanhita, we know that Chakshuresha Savita Sakalagrahanam Rajasamacha Suramurti Asesha Teja Yes Yagya Bhavita Sangbita Kalachakro Govinda Mahari Purusham Tamahang Vajami. So dear Lord Brahma is worshipping Govinda as the person who's giving the order for the sun to perform his journey, mounting the wheel of time. And the sun is referred to there as the king of all planets, possessed of Asesha Teja, unlimited potency, unlimited effulgence. Now, where's that unlimited effulgence coming from? It's coming from Krishna. It's coming from Krishna. So in this way, if we're actually intelligent, we worship the Supreme Lord directly or indirectly through his representatives like the demigods or the spiritual master. But we should not misuse our intelligence like these guys. You know, such danger, go through such danger, use your intelligence to create these ships and go out there in such dangerous conditions just to get some oil, which can be easily obtained by planting the right kind of plants and just pressing them into oil. You know, so in this way we misuse our human form of life, we misuse our intelligence, and there's a price to pay. Because Krishna, again, being Kavi, Kavim Puranam, he knows everything. Nobody gets away with anything. So we can stop here. Any questions? Comments? So ask for more.
Of the Supreme Lord. It's interesting, I heard a lecture by Srila Prabhupada recently where he said that the question always is, what does the spirit soul look like? And then Prabhupada gave a wonderful example of how, just like if you have a shirt has sleeves on it, you know, and buttons, and you put it on your body because you have arms. So Prabhupada said that as you see the body, that is actually the soul. The soul is like the shirt. You know, it's the covering of the soul. So it's interesting to note that you made that comment, that even though the soul is within the most infinitesimal living entity, it has a particular shape, even though it's inconceivable. But what's really amazing that you can just look at yourself, and this is what the soul looks like in terms of the body of the soul.
Right. The soul has form, in other words.
It has form.
It's ultimately, there is no formlessness.
Yes, because this is the hard thing to understand. Like, what is the soul? Is it just light? Is it like a little...
Spark?
No, it actually has a form. It's actually a person. And that's, I thought it was pretty interesting how you said that. Even though it can be the smallest, it has a form.
That's right. I think Mukunda Dutt had his hand up next. Okay. And then Satchitana.
Yeah, I just had a couple of comments here. This one verse that Prabhupada quotes from Madhvacharya, he actually specifically mentions Plakshadweep there in the verse.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making that point that they're worshiping Lord Krishna, who's situated within, you know, the sun god, the moon god, the fire god, Varun, etc., etc. That's one thing, and then I think one of the reasons that Prabhupada is commenting on this so much is because it seems the acharyas are quoting again and again and again from various Shruti mantras here, because the topic resonates pretty well with what's stated in the different Vedic literatures. They generally emphasize the importance of the demigods because practically they're the most tangibly involved in our day-to-day affairs. And then finally, there's one word here, rutasya, which Prabhupada translates meaning of dharma. There's a subtle distinction made in the Vedas between Rita and Dharma. Rita is that order that governs the cosmic functions, and that as long as people perform their prescribed duties, then the cosmic functions will go on very smoothly. But to the degree that people don't perform their prescribed duties nicely, then the entire cosmic function is disrupted. Mm-hmm. And all that's kind of implied there with the word. But I just wanted to make those comments.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for the nice class.
And in today's society, everybody's completely way off from what they're supposed to be doing, and they probably have such a big mess. With the microphone, what you do is turn it so it faces away from the speakers. That's when you get that feedback. Yeah.
I think Mukunda that already answered my question, more or less. But in that same verse, Brahmana mitas sachamityas chat, this prayer is made by intelligent, highly intelligent persons. Now, for us, trying to present the concept of God to the less intelligent, they usually have a concept of God is all good. And then here they find that inauspicious things come from him too. So the cause of their suffering, the cause of their misfortune, how could that be good? And and also you quote another verse in the Bhagavad Gita where it says that he knows past, present and future. And then the very often question comes sometimes, if he knew, because he knew, he knows the future that I'm going to be suffering, why did he create these inauspicious things? How could that be beneficial? Can you explain that?
Yeah, well, this is why we have to explain, first of all, from the very beginning, that you're not this body, you're an eternal soul. So all these things that are happening on the body platform are temporary. And they're going on because of our desire. And that's why Krishna explains in the 13th chapter that purushaksukadukhanam, that the living entity is actually the cause of his own happiness and distress. Even though we say Krishna, God, is the cause of all causes, Krishna points out there in the 13th chapter that you, the so-called Purusha, purushaksukadukhanam, you're the actual cause, hetu, of your own happiness and distress because of your not following what Krishna wants you to do. If we act according to God's instructions, then we will rise above this plane of material happiness and material distress. As long as we want to enjoy separately from God, then God says okay. In other words, if he doesn't give you the okay, it can't happen. It can't happen. But, so you may say, well, why does he give you the okay? Because he's not so concerned about what's going to happen to us, because we are actually, as he pointed out in the second chapter, we're indestructible, we cannot be burned by fire, cannot be withered by the wind. It's just like if you had a child, and if you know that child was some kind of superhero, could not be hurt in any way, no matter what, then you wouldn't worry. Why would you have to worry? You worry about children who are vulnerable, who can drown, who can burn, you worry about them. But if you had children who are, cannot drown, cannot be burned, cannot be withered, cannot be blown away, cannot be hurt in any way, then you're not going to worry. So ultimately Krishna's not worried about us because he knows that we're indestructible just like he is. But he sets the stage for us to, you could say, get into trouble so that we can come to our senses and again go back to that platform of indestructibility. Now because we think we are these bodies, we are afraid. Something could happen to me and I have to make so many arrangements, but in spite of all arrangements, death happens anyway. So that's the point. That's the point. God is, yes, the cause of all causes, so you could say he's the cause of inauspicious and evil things also, if you would. But it's just him allowing us to play out our evil desires and our inauspicious desires. Those desires are coming from us. Those desires are coming from us. And we see on a daily basis, in spite of so many laws, and in spite of the fact that we know that if we get hurt, we feel pain, still people go out and break the law and give each other pain. From simple things like using your cell phone while driving. It's against the law in California to speak on your cell phone while you drive, but people do it all the time. People do it all the time. They disregard the law. And therefore, if they cause an accident or if they get a ticket, who do they have to blame? Can they say it's God's fault? Your fault. You made that conscious choice. You know it's a law not to speak on cell phone while driving, but you consciously choose to do it. Therefore, if you have an accident or if you get a ticket, you can't blame God. So it's like that in with everything. We're here because we choose to be here. As soon as we turn back to God again and act according to God's instructions, we're qualified to get out of here. Okay, Granthavachimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Chitta Prabhu ki jai.